Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the first official EFL podcast of 2024. A very happy new year to you all, and to get the new year up and running, our special guest started in style with a hat-trick on January the 1st, no less. Wrexham hitman, Steve Fletcher.
I still want to, obviously, want this club to get to where it wants to be, and it's obviously, if we can do that, it's fantastic, and to be part of it, like I said, at the stage of my career, it's unbelievable.
As if Sky Sports' David Stowell didn't get enough presents for Christmas, he gets an extra one, which is hosting this week's pod with yours truly. And Cardiff City's Abu Adams takes our 72 in 72 challenge. It's a brand new year, but we're bringing you the same top quality right here on the official EFL podcast. Okay, welcome along to the first official EFL podcast of 2024. Some things are brand new, it's a new year, some things are wonderfully the same. David Stowell, how are you?
I wonder what you were going to say then. desperately old or something like that. No, fine, thank you. Very nice Christmas and ready to get going again. How was yours?
It's good, it was good. Busy, but busy's good. Keeps us all out of trouble, doesn't it? And speaking of keeping out of trouble, there's a man on here that's been very, very busy indeed. Let's wind the clock back. Hibernian, Burnley, Wolves, Sunderland, Marseille, Sheffield Wednesday, Stoke City, Dundee United, a little break, and now he's at Wrexham and scoring goals. A hat-trick, no less, on New Year's Day. Stephen Fletcher, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on, mate. A cheekier man than me would say rolling back the ears at 36, but still very much within the goals. And looking at you now, my word, you're in peak physical fitness. It's been a good new year for you. How have you found it?
It has. It's been a quiet one, and obviously until the first. You know what the Christmas period is like. It's so busy. We had two away games, which was the travelling takes out you, especially at my age. Coming back and obviously getting my first start for a while, obviously through injury and stuff. So it was... For the first 20 minutes, I thought, oh no, I've made the wrong decision here. I couldn't get going at all until my first goal went in. It gave me a little boost, and then, just went on from there.
Does that thrill of scoring goals, regardless of where it is, who it's against, how far into your career you are, is it the same buzz that it's always been for you?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's even better now because my kids are at a good age where especially my little boy's the middle one, he loves football and he understands it a lot better now. So he's kind of like, he's probably my harshest critic when I come off the pitch because he's just blatantly too honest to me. Yeah. It's good in that aspect of seeing the kids getting to watch you, because obviously when I was playing, for instance, in the Premier League and stuff, they were too young, didn't understand what was going on. They were babies, to be fair. So now it's that little extra when you get a goal, you look over and you can see them there. Do you know what I mean? So it's good.
And let's just say the fact that you are at Wrexham. I hear there was someone involved in making phone calls that got you over there, which, I mean, there's many people across the board, I mean, my wife included, that would like to take a phone call from a certain person that got you over to Wrexham.
I think it's a common thing that he does. Obviously, when you sign for the club, it's always nice for them to give you a phone call. I don't think, obviously, that many owners in England do that, but obviously with who he is and stuff, it's a nice little kind of, it's a good feeling when you get that phone call off him after, especially just saying welcome to the club, and just for what they've done for the club, done for the place as well. Do you know what I mean? It's fantastic what they're doing. The buzz around Wrexham's, honestly, it's something else that, even though I have played at no disrespect, with bigger clubs, it's up there with the buzz around the place is up there with the teams I've played with. It's unbelievable.
That must be quite odd, though, surely, for you in some ways, because you've played at the highest level, you've played international football, and now you're down in League Two, but at a club, like you say, which has this real buzz about it, this real excitement about it. So how do you kind of explain that to yourself, almost, that you're in that, having done what you've done?
It's refreshing, especially I'm not going to say my age, I'm going to say at the stage of my career. It's refreshing, do you know what I mean? Just to be like... Because I think everyone always kind of thinks, always you've moved down a few leagues, you're kind of like settling down now. But I still want to, obviously, want this club to get to where it wants to be. And it's obviously, if we can do that, it's fantastic. And to be part of it, like I said, at the stage of my career, it's unbelievable.
Does that feel like there's a bit of an Indian summer with it all, Stephen? Because coming away from Dundee at the age that you did, and sorry, this isn't an age-related podcast, don't worry about that. But I was reading a couple of articles that suggested that in your head, you were getting around, well, this could be it now. The boots are going to be hung up and then the next part of your life starts when you are still a relatively young man. But then that chance to come and get back into it, because football is football, isn't it? Like you said, we talk about the different levels, but that buzz, that 90 minutes or 100 minutes as it is now, I mean, that fundamentally stays the same and your love for it stays the same, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think you say that, the buzz, you from being a footballer near enough all my life, it's hard to get that again from anything else. So like you said there, you were naming my clubs and then you said I took a little time out. That little time out was, I was considering, it was, mm-hmm. I was probably 75% done and thinking, do you know what? I think the last season took a lot out of me, kind of mentally, not physically. Physically, I still feel as fit as I have for a number of years, but mentally getting relegated and, especially with the expectation they had at that club at that time, we'd never ever envisioned that we were going to get relegated, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it did take a lot out of me. And I took a little bit of time away and I just thought, I think it was when I was on holiday, to be honest with you, I was sitting at the beach and I was like, I don't know if I want to go back and do a pre-season.
Pre-season can do what?
yeah, that pre-season was just getting further and further away and I was thinking, no, I don't know if I can go back and do this. And then, yeah, like I said, I was on the golf course enjoying myself and I was ticking over still, I always do anyway, so I was always ticking over just in case, but the longer it went on, I thought, I was enjoying the school run and then going straight to the golf course, to be honest with you, so, but then, I got the phone call and I thought, you know what, I had the wife kind of seen a little change in me when I had the phone call, and she was like, you need to go back, I can tell you've still got something there that, I'm finished business, more probably was the best way to describe it, and when the phone call came, the gaffer was brilliant on the phone. He just said, listen, like, we'd love you to come down. And after the phone call, literally, he was like, could you come down now? And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, I'm probably going to need to go and tell the wife that one. But I could come down now.
And that's from being based up in Glasgow.
Yes. I was actually on the golf course when I took the phone call, actually.
Yeah.
I was on about the 16th hole playing well, actually.
Did you finish the round before you left?
I did, but it wasn't great by then because I was all sorts was going through my head. I was like, oh no, I need to go back and tell the wife I'm away. I need to pack a bag. So it was actually straight off the golf course, back home, packed a bag and left.
The thought of joining Prats on the sofa, presumably in retirement, would have been enough to put you off hanging the boots up. But I mean, in terms of Wrexham itself, I mean, I used to cover Wrexham before they were famous, if you like. I mean, worldwide fame that you've kind of got. This situation now with the club after the documentary and obviously the owners and everything. How do you as players sort of get your heads around a little bit of the past frustration of Wrexham fans, if you like? Because obviously having been in non-league for so long and struggling to get up into the EFL and then finally doing it, now there's a real momentum behind the club, isn't there? Which hasn't been there for a long time.
I think the fans are just riding the wave that everyone else is just there. Do you know what I mean? It's such a hype around the place, and I think we're all just kind of going with it and it's going in the right direction, and obviously the gaffer's got the lads playing some good football as well. He's brought in he's recruited very well, I think, especially with James McLean, some experience, and George Evans has been, he's like a Rolls Royce in that midfield, the way you see him when he come back at the weekend there from his three-game ban. It was just like he just slotted straight back in, and he's a big part of how we play. And then you've got the likes of Mullen and Elliot Lee who can score a goal from nothing. So everyone's just riding that wave of last season, obviously, and we've kind of carried that momentum on, and hopefully may that continue.
It seems like a really good mix of players with all different kinds of experience, because going back to Stowley's point about fan perception and fan expectation. You see these big names, big Premier League names walk in the door, then collectively, no wonder there's a buzz. But also, does that then mean that promotion has to be the be-all and end-all come the end of the season?
I think it is obviously, there's a lot of pressure for us that come in, myself and James, because I do think people probably expect, to be honest with you, I don't think people expected much from me with the age I was at. So I'm hoping I've put a smile on their face. There is obviously expectation and pressure, but the boys are handling it well. There probably was last season, especially after the year before when they got so close, and then the year after, I think everyone expected them to go on again and push on. So like I said, they're just they're just riding. It's a good wave to be on just now that we're doing. And like I said, if we can keep the momentum going and the form going, then it's we've got a good chance.
And it's part of what sort of keeping you in the game and keeping your mind fresh, the fact that you've got a real battle on to get in the team, haven't you, with Paul Mullen obviously being sort of the headline injury over the summer and then coming back in and scoring goals and, you know, the fact that you've got a bit of competition up there. Now you've come in, you've got the hat-trick against Barrow. You know, there's a good fight on there, isn't there?
There is. We've got a good group of strikers. We have. We've got a good two good young lads as well with Sam Dolby and Bickerstaff. Bicker's obviously just signed a new deal as well, which is great for him and the club. And Ollie Palmer, obviously Ollie's out injured just now, but he will be back relatively soon. So we've got a good competition, and it's good for strikers, I think. It's because you need to be kept on your toes. You need to be kept on your toes because I've played in a lot of clubs and we've had a lot of strikers, and you know for a fact if your form dips, someone will come in and if they stay in the team, you're sitting watching from the side. So it's good. It's a good competition we've got going just now.
Competition between strikers. I know that goalies are odd. Strikers are their own kind of little characteristic as well. So in that sense, are you all rooting for each other and pushing each other on? You're smiling, so
as I've got older, I love, like, obviously I done my coaching when a few years ago, so I've always had, when I was younger, I'll be honest, I just wanted to play. I was selfish, I wanted to play. But as I've got older, I love helping the young strikers on, and they don't even need to be young, but you just, your strike partner, just kind of like little things that you've picked up over your career. And listen, I'm still learning as well, and you see the game's changed, the technique of even the way, like, even from the way Mills hits the ball, it's ridiculous. His finishing and stuff, and then the young lads as well, they can all put stuff on the ball that I could only dream of, the way they hit it. And I'm like, how the ball's going, it looks like it's going about 30 yards over the bar, and next minute it just dips under and you're thinking, that's ridiculous. I'd do my back out trying to hit a shot like that. But it's just, do you know what I mean? So I'm always learning as well. I'm actually asking them, where do you hit the ball for that to do that?
You mentioned coaching though, and badges, and presumably in the little period that you weren't attached to a club, that next step must have been looming pretty large. So now you're back with the boots on playing. Is coaching part of your future?
I'd like to think so, yeah. I will complete my badges and I'll all have them there. I do enjoy it. Before I'd done them, I kind of got pushed into doing it and I was like, yeah. I don't know. But see, when I started it, I got addicted to it and I was like, This is good. And see, before, when I was out, I went away for a week with the Scottish FA, and I didn't want it to end. And I had to go back to my club, and I was thinking, I don't want to go back. I want to carry on doing this. It was that enjoyable. But then obviously you take time away, and golf takes over. I'm not going to lie. and then I was back playing. So I will carry on doing bits and pieces. But yeah, right now I'm concentrating on playing. I'm playing golf.
You talk about passing on experience. I mean, in that little short spell out of the game, if you like, before joining Wrexham, did you start looking back over the career a little bit and sort of looking at your route through football? And particularly, I'm thinking, obviously, the club that sort of stands out on the CV there for a sort of change of scene and change of experience, if you like, is Marseille. There were various, obviously, other bits with the Premier League football, with the international football as well. But did you kind of have a chance to think back over that and the sort of the moments that stood out for you, particularly the positive ones, the bits you enjoyed most?
Yeah, do you know what? I kind of switched off for a bit. I probably switched off too much. And that's why I think I was kind of just going out and playing golf and didn't actually realise that this could be it over, do you know what I mean? I don't know if I had it in the back of my mind that I was always going to go back, but just didn't want to tell anyone. And the missus was probably saying, I think she got sick of me, to be honest with you. We were going on the school runs and I was literally like, right, so what are we doing now? And she was like, I've got my routine, leave me alone. Yeah, basically that, yeah. I've not had a chance to sit down and actually go over it, but obviously when people like yourself bring it up, you do sit here now and it kind of runs through your mind and you're thinking.
Over 700 games in various places for various clubs.
Yeah, yeah. The Marseille one, don't get me wrong, was what an experience. I probably didn't respect it enough when I was there and enjoy it enough when I was there because of the circumstances of going there. Obviously, I went on loan. I still
did it come
like
out
could,
of nowhere then, Fletch? As in,
out the blue, honestly. Yeah. It was like, I was, the story's ridiculous. I was lying in bed on I think the transfer window was the shut on the Monday night at 11 o'clock. I was in bed Sunday night. And I'm an early bedder. I go to bed early. So the wife's still up when I'm in bed and she was nudging me saying, by the way, your phone keeps ringing. It's your agent. And I was like, what's he phoning me on a Sunday night for? I answered the phone. He basically said, listen, you've got a chance of going here tomorrow. The transfer window shuts, blah, blah, blah. So you might need to take a bag into training. And I was like, so I'm turning up to training, like obviously a little shirt and that on, like
and yeah, the boys are like, something to do with Fletcher.
Yeah, I've got a bag in that. And the boys are like, where are you going after this?
That's I was like, up, oh no,
yeah. And it literally just happened that I went into training Sunday. It was Allardyce at the time. Sam had just said, listen, don't train today because I think you're going. And I was like, all right, no worries. About 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I was away on a plane. That was it. Dashing around Marseille trying to get my medical done and signed. It came out of absolutely nowhere. Even some of the players, I think some of the players were looking at me, who's that? No, got a clue. Well, I remember my first game.
How's your French?
Not great at all. Do you know what the worst thing was? We had such a young team at Marseille and they all wanted to come to the Premier League. That was there, like when I went in and that, they were all talking to me about it and they all wanted to learn English. So I think I just got there at the wrong time. And I actually said to them, listen, if you want to learn English, you don't come to me.
Don't speak to a Scot.
Yeah. No one can understand me over there, so never mind. But yeah, it was surreal, to be fair, just over there. I was coming into training every day, shorts and T-shirt. Don't get me wrong, all the French lads were coming in wrapped up. They were like, you're mad. I was like, double figures, it's shorts and T-shirt.
This is glorious if you're from Glasgow.
Yeah, this is amazing. But yeah, no, it was brilliant.
Would as following on from what Stowley said before, we just briefly touch on the weekend. Is there a club that stands out? Is there one place that you felt feel the fondest about in the long? I mean, 700 games. That's a stunning achievement.
Do you know what? No disrespect to all the other clubs I played with because I loved all of them. All the experiences I got kind of made me the person I am now. But I love Sheffield Wednesday. I loved it there, honestly. Like, I actually felt at home for the first time. I don't know if it was because of the age I was at, and I was kind of, I think I was 28 when I signed there, and I'd just left Marseille, and my youngest was born there as well. And I don't know, it was just something about the place. My wife was settled there, the family were, and I spent 4 years there, do you know what I mean? So I did want to kind of stay there by the end of it, but obviously COVID and circumstances and stuff for the club, that it just couldn't, we couldn't get anything done. But yeah, I'd say Sheffield Wednesday was like, just for the lads as well, I just felt at home for the first time in a long time. Do you know what I mean? From moving down from Scotland, such a young age. Yeah, so yeah, probably Sheffield Wednesday.
It's a privilege, isn't it? Because I think there's a presumption sometimes that you chuck a lot of lads together that play football and everyone's best mates. It's not.
Yeah, it's not at all, no.
You look around some dressing rooms and think, oh my God, and they're looking at you the same.
100%, 100%.
So when you do get it right, Fletch, it's an amazing thing.
It is.
I mean, speaking of getting it right, this weekend it's MK Dons. We're chatting on Wednesday. How's the body holding up? Are you going to be playing every week? Are you in and out? What's the script? How are you getting managed?
I've not actually had time to be managed, obviously, because I had the knee surgery. I came back. When I first came, obviously, I didn't have a pre-season, so the manager managed me really well. He was putting me on, getting minutes in the legs, trying to train as much as I could. And then obviously I had the setback with the knee and had to have surgery, and I'd not really had any problems with my knee for years. It just popped up from nowhere. I was lucky enough, it was only a clear out, so literally just got it cleaned out and I was back. Physios were great with me. So now it's just about trying to manage now, but obviously with the FA Cup coming up, we had the games on Sunday, so then we'll have the league game again. So I will have time to kind of recover. But to be fair, I'll give them the due at Wrexham. They do give us every like thing we need to recover. We've got the cryo and everything, so I can't complain.
Two old boys with dodgy knees, that's just you and Stowley.
I'm running now.
You're running now.
My biggest
is almost
present,
back to full fitness.
I'm on
Fletch.
The treadmill.
Happy
now,
days.
I can run. ACL reconstruction in the summer. Won't bore you with the details. Back running. There we go.
Happy days.
Right, gents, this has been lovely. Stowley, you're going to get a little break, but we're going to let Stephen go. Stephen, it's been so nice to catch up, mate, and watching it from afar and being able to discuss it with you firsthand. And if you do get a chance to sit and think about it, you'd be right to be very, very proud of what you've done, mate. It's been phenomenal.
Thank you very much, mate. Thank you.
Okay, okay, right. Our first 72 in 72 of 2024. My God, that's a lot of numbers in one sentence. Is Cardiff City's Abel Adams. Take it away.
This is Ebu Adams. This is 72 in 72. Wrexham, Forest Green, Barrow, Carlisle, Bradford, Swindon, Harrogate, Bolton, Wigan, Reading, Chelsea. No, that's not included. That's Prem. Oh my God. Cardiff, Swansea, Bristol City, Bristol Rovers, Cheltenham, Birmingham, West Brom, Stoke, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, Luton, nope. I've gone blank here. Accrington Stanley, Portsmouth, Peterborough, Watford, Oxford. Ooh, gone blank here again. Ipswich, Norwich. I've gone blank. Leeds.
So, Cardiff City's Abu Adams there with a very respectable score of 28, which puts him just below Matt Smith, Richie Wellens and Wayne Rooney. More on Wayne Rooney in just a second, Stowley. Under there, we've got John Coleman, Mark Albrighton, Joe Bryan, Liam Rossini, Matt Bloomfield, Andrew Moran, Valerian Ishmael, Alfie May, Gary Rowett, Stuart Dallas, Reuben Colwell and Aaron Ramsey at the foot of the table on 13, which, given what we've just listened to as well in our little break, could make someone very happy indeed in future episodes of 72 in 72. Right, enough mystique. We're going to get stuck into the championship. By the way, what a lovely fellow Stephen Fletcher is, Stowley, wasn't he? Nice to
Absolutely.
Chat to him.
Absolutely. Great to hear from him. A lot of experience in the tank Lots there and clearly experience. A lot more to give as well, which is nice to see.
Yes, he was lovely. And we like the good guys here on the official EFL podcast. Wayne Rooney was in at Birmingham for 13 weeks. He's now on his way out of Birmingham. We discussed it at the time with John Eustace doing a sterling job with the team in the playoff places. He now leaves the side 6 points above the bottom three. First question, was it enough time? Second question, was it the right decision?
Oh, some big questions there. well, I mean, 83 days in a job is surely never long enough to really change things. But then, of course, not a lot really needed to be changed in many people's eyes. It's a very strange situation all round. 15 games, just 2 wins, appointed on the 11th of October, and as you say, just gone in the last few days. It's, I mean, if I were a Birmingham City fan, I'd be so frustrated because the season has essentially been thrown away, albeit the Championship is a ridiculously tight division in which a few wins on the bounce, if you get momentum, you can fly up that table. But they were in such a good position. And who knows, in another world, they might have stayed in the top six and gone up. We'll never know, obviously, and maybe they wouldn't have done. But from that promising position to be now in a situation where I don't think they'll go down. They've got a 6-point cushion on the bottom three. But you never know. They could. And to think that they could end up going down at the end of a season in which at one point they were in a very promising sixth place is crazy. And they've got some big games before the end of the transfer window. So, I mean, a lot of people thought Wayne would get the transfer window. Having come in, he'd at least get that. The fact that he hasn't now means the appointment needs to happen quickly to ensure that that manager gets the time to, first of all, assess what he's got and, second of all, deal with it and bring people in and get people out. Swansea and Middlesbrough at home and Stoke away. And obviously, Swansea and Stoke are sort of in the mix in the wrong end of the table. Middlesbrough desperately trying to get consistency and get up towards the playoff spots. It's not quite happening for them at the moment. It feels now like Birmingham City are again where they were after the whole Gary Rowett thing. I know it's a a topic that's been mentioned a lot. Mm-hmm. Gary Rowett sacked in December 2016. Again, in a very good position. Gianfranco Zola came in as a big name to manage the club. He lasted 22 games, won just twice in that time. And he went, and the club's been chasing its tail ever since. And it feels like 7 years has just gone without a lot of meaningful reward.
And that small bark was my dog either agreeing with you or disagreeing with
Probably
you.
Disagreeing.
I'll have a word with her after this. One paw up for yes, two paws up for no. And then the real proof in the pudding, and we'll see what happens in January with Birmingham City, was that team in the playoff places overachieving? And is the team under Wayne Rooney underachieving? I mean, do Birmingham exist somewhere in the middle? Like I said, time will tell with that one, because I still think, given the makeup of the top six, seven, eight, that squad to be in that mix for me would have been overachieving. overachieving and coaches of a certain background. We looked at a glamour name in Wayne Rooney and a name that is linked to career coaching and doing a good job thus far in the Championship is Danny Rowell, of course, at Sheffield Wednesday. A slightly different route into the management game with regards to where he comes from and where Wayne Rooney comes from. But broadly, even though that team is still in a precarious position, the club is, there's been a universal embrace of what he's done with Wednesday so far.
Yeah, it's important to underline nothing's been achieved yet at Wednesday in the sense that they're still obviously in trouble. They're 3 points from safety in the Championship down at the bottom. And third from bottom, indeed, Rotherham and QPR underneath them. But the interesting contrast here, as you say, is that, you know, Wayne Rooney comes in with a sort of fanfare of the career that he's had. Whereas when Danny Rowell came in at Sheffield Wednesday, some people sort of said, well, who is this guy? Mm. Now, he's very well respected if you know your coaching circles, and he's been number two for various different managers at various different clubs. And we touched on that earlier on in the season. But as a 34-year-old coming in as the youngest manager in the EFL, as an unknown quantity, his first managerial job, and Wednesday's 11th permanent manager in 12 years, there's a lot to unpack from that appointment, and especially when it started with five defeats in the first six, and maybe people thought, well, this guy isn't going to turn it round, the club's going down, let's just forget about the season. But then came the Leicester game, which I commentated on, a home match. Leicester City led fairly early on in the game, controlled the match, but took their foot off the pedal a bit. Sheffield Wednesday were never out of it, had moments of danger, and looked promising at times. Got an equaliser right at the death, 93rd minute, I think it was, Jeff Hendrick off the bench to score. And they've won five of the eight since that match. Mm-hmm. Losing the other three, it's a bit all or nothing. But at the same point, five wins out of eight is not relegation form, clearly. And there's a plan, there's an identity, and there's a bit of that good old Yorkshire grit coming through now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of promise. And having commentated on the Sunderland defeat at Hillsborough earlier on in the season, one of the last games under Chisco Muñoz, when there was almost an element of resignation amongst the fans. They were angry at where the club was, but it almost sort of felt like it had gone past that. Now there feels that promise, and they are difficult to beat at Hillsborough, as you'd expect with the atmosphere that they can create there.
If we kind of cast our eyes back up towards the top, I mean, it's hard to take your eyes off Leicester. 10 clear of Ipswich in second. I suppose the real intrigue then comes down, doesn't it, with Ipswich just 3 points ahead of Southampton, Leeds in fourth with 48 points, West Brom, Sunderland making up the top six. And we saw Southampton leapfrog Leeds over the course of the Christmas period. Back-to-back defeats against Preston and West Brom. Back to it against Birmingham, albeit, as we said, them in a tricky position, the Blues. So given that, out of the Christmas type of period, Southampton marginally better than Leeds is, would you say?
Yeah, Leeds was a funny one, wasn't it? Because they sort of took Ipswich apart, winning 4-0, and looked really good. And you'd have thought at that point, this is going to be a great Christmas, they're going to kick on. But then obviously losing to Preston, who are, to be honest, you don't quite know what you're going to get with Preston at the moment. West Brom, who are starting to fire. I did their game against Stoke City, and they did well in that game, but they've kicked on since and had very promising moments throughout the course of the season. The interesting thing with Leeds last time out, the Birmingham win, was the fact that Patrick Bamford came in up front, Joel Pirou on the bench, and Jorginho Rutter was the number 10 mm-hmm. rather than the number 9. He really enjoyed himself in that game. It's only one game, obviously, so you don't want to say that's where he should play. But a few people have been saying that through the course of the season. Some fans have been calling for him to perhaps play there. And I wonder if that might be a slight switch that benefits them throughout the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. And the ability for Peru and Ruter and Bamford as a three to kind of rotate in those slots, maybe. We'll see. The only fear I had with Leeds coming into Christmas, having commentated on the game at Rotherham, when they went ahead and they were basically in charge of the match. It felt like it was a very comfortable match, but the lead was only fragile. It was only the one goal lead. And right on half-time, Rotherham equalised. And then the second half, Leeds didn't really get going again to kick on and get that second, third and fourth goal, say, that you'd expect them to do at a club who's really struggling in Rotherham down at the bottom. So they just need to make sure that they make those games count, because it's too easy, isn't it, I suppose, in a match. And you'll know from being on either side of the fence, sometimes you're in a game which you just think you're going to win quite well, and the ball gets passed around and time disappears, and before you know it, you're in added time at the end and you've only got a point.
Scrabbling around trying to make up for poor decisions, that's just the story of my life, Starley. Also, I mean, so, just to name check before we dip into League One, Sunderland and Michael Beale, lots of emphasis on his appointment, given the fact that Tony Mowbray, we believe, was doing a good job, but he's got the Black Cats back into the top six. I'm intrigued to see how that one pans out. Top
Alex
of League
Pritchard
One.
Key for them as well, Pritz, isn't he?
He is
just coming into it now after a bad spell in his career, really, the Huddersfield thing. And so it's nice to see him doing well.
And as well, I mean, he would be classed as the elder statesman at Sunderland,
indeed,
wouldn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, whether he'd thank us for that. It's a bit like me and you telling Stephen Fletcher how old he was several times and then just taking off the chin and getting on with it. Fletch, you're really old, mate. Well done for still running around. As I said, top of League One, Pompey, Bolton, Peterborough. Derby, the great run of form, obviously, up until they were beaten by Peterborough last time at Oxford and Barnsley. The top end of League One has got a real familiarity to it. And it's been like that for quite a while. I'm just really intrigued as we turn into 2024, what this looks like come the end of the season, because big names right at the top, big names that we believe would last the distance from here on in.
Yeah, I mean, that's really where Portsmouth want to make this season count, isn't it? There have been quite a few false dawns, if you like, really promising league starts that have petered out. And this season, they've looked really commanding in terms of results and position in the table. Just before Christmas, they drew with Fleetwood. We'll talk Fleetwood in a second, I think. But that was a disappointing home point for them in many ways. Then they lost at Bristol Rovers and only drew then at Exeter, who were also struggling down at the wrong end of the table. So beating Stevenage on New Year's Day was a big lift to sort of get back on track after three sort of results that they certainly wouldn't have expected or wanted to get during the course of Christmas. And you mentioned Peterborough. I mean, that's the kind of club which is always intriguing, because they've always had that element of jeopardy. They score loads of goals, they concede a fair few as well. There was the playoff drama last season, and there tends to be quite a lot of drama around their games, no more so than the game at Derby the other day. 2-1 down with 6 minutes to play, equalised on 84 minutes, then won it in added time. They haven't lost since, was it November the 11th at Wigan? I think it's one defeat in 13 games for them. So they're obviously kicking on as well. And Bolton, likewise, back-to-back defeats in early December. And we wondered how they'd respond. And they won four on the bounce. So it's about those setbacks, isn't it? But then responding to them and not letting that bad form fester. And that the teams at the top are the teams who can shake these things off. Maybe because of players with experience. Maybe because of the ability of their managers. Maybe a mixture of the two.
Ability of managers, that's the next case in point. Lee Johnson has parted company with Fleetwood. They're on the third manager of the season. They've gone for Charlie Adam, who was formerly the loans manager at Burnley. Lee Johnson, where does he go from here, and what are we going to get from Charlie Adam?
Two difficult questions to answer. I'll give it a go. Lee, I think, has always been a really approachable guy in terms of chatting to the media, working out what
superb
his strategy is. Yeah. I mean, I've spoken to him before Wembley finals before and things like that, and he's been on great form. I do think he's got a future as a manager. I think he's got promise there. The problem is obviously that he was sacked at Hibernian, then came straight back in almost at Fleetwood, and then it hasn't worked out. And then you've just got to take your time to recover and make sure your next club is a really good fit for you. So I wish him well, and I hope it works out well for him in that game. Just lasted 111 days at Fleetwood, which, again, we talk about Wayne Rooney getting 83 days. We're not talking about a long time here to get in, get your sort of philosophy, if you like, which is always one of those managerial buzzwords, and get the side playing the way you want to play. And then, of course, the idea of the January transfer window, which he hasn't had to make the squad his. So, an interesting decision to let him go. In terms of Charlie, rarely does having three managers in the season work out well for a club. Charlie's an unknown quantity in a managerial sense. Again, we wish him well. We want to see clubs do well and not falter like this. I was actually mistaken for Charlie Adam once at Blackpool. I would turn up to do a game and someone tried to usher me into a corporate box to meet some fans.
You went on the pitch trying to score from the halfway line every 2 minutes, were you?
They did very quickly realise I wasn't it. Charlie Adam there. But I spoke to him recently, actually. We were talking about when he was coming back from injury with Blackpool in the reserve team, and I covered a match when he was playing against a lot of younger players in the under-21s, as it was, or under-23s, as it was then, one of the two. And he was very good then at encouraging younger players who he was playing against when they'd done something good on the pitch or they made a good challenge. And he saw it very much as playing at that level was about him bringing other players on, whichever shirt they were in. And that will bode well for Fleetwood if they can sort of harbour that sense or harness that sense of... almost like a father figure, but a managerial figure at the same time to help the squad on and get them out of trouble, because it does look like the arm is needed around the shoulder for some.
So that's the bottom end of League One. At the top of League Two, Mansfield beat Stockport, Wrexham beat Barrow, Notts County lost to Tranmere. We just spoke to Stephen Fletcher, of course, who seems to be thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying himself with Wrexham. And we didn't actually use the name of the fellow that rang him. It was Ryan Reynolds. I think he's an actor. He does bits.
Something like that,
In and around the EFL, he does bits. But again, so you've got Stockport losing to Mansfield. Mansfield just 2 points behind them. Two games in hand as well. Wrexham with a game in hand on the top of the table. Barrow also... Notts County, we'll come on to them in just a second. I mean, that's more to do with how well Tranmere are doing under Nigel Adkins. It's a phenomenal turnaround that he's managed to instigate. But again, we've got a proper race for promotion, even though there is that gap of 4 points between Wrexham and Barrow, between third and fourth. And again, akin to what we've seen in the past from the turn of the year and teams really kind of putting the pedal down and going through the gears to make sure that promotion is theirs. This is a fascinating one because sandwiched between Stockport and Wrexham, Mansfield Town, we're ticking off different boxes and different approaches here, aren't we, of how to get out of a football division?
Yeah, and form is it can be very up and down in a season, even if you win a league or get promotion, can't it? Particularly in League Two, the last few years has been really competitive in terms of not being an awful lot of difference between a team in, say, sixth place and a team in 12th or 13th. And just going on a run, that momentum, that consistency for a brief spell can just get you up that little bit higher, which makes all the difference at the end of the season. Stockport obviously went through 12 consecutive league wins, which is phenomenal and record equaling, but they've only won two of the last eight. So they're faltering a little bit. Mansfield have won 9 of their last 12, so they're going in the other direction, if you like. Wrexham were unbeaten in 5 before they lost to Walsall. Barrow lost to Wrexham. They were on a club record run of 14 league games unbeaten. So everyone is taking points off everybody to an extent. And what's interesting is you look at the top group that we're talking about there and how well they're all doing, but actually there's not a massive amount of difference between, say, Notts County in fifth with 42 points and MK Dons in eighth with 39. And below them, there's only 5 points down to 14th and Harrogate Town and Bradford City. And then 1 point below them are Tranmere, who a couple of months ago were going down. That's what a lot of people thought. And it's all turned around for them now. So, I mean, it's a crazy division where a few wins and you fly up the table, or a few defeats and you're looking over your shoulder.
You mentioned Tranmere. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4 wins on the spin within a very, very good run of fixtures and results anyway. 4-2 against Notts County. That is a statement victory, it feels like, in this particular division, given pre-season predictions of where Notts should finish and where Tranmere perhaps should finish.
Yeah, and again, it's how you react, isn't it, in a division like this? So Tranmere lost 6 on the bounce, and then it's 7 wins from the 11 since that. And it coincided with Nigel Adkins' appointment as a permanent manager rather than the interim manager when he replaced Ian Dawes. And like I say, a while back we were saying they could go down. They could actually go up. I mean, who knows how the season will unfold from here, and there's so much time and so many games still to play. But they're only 6 points off the playoffs now, whereas a while ago we were talking about them potentially being cut adrift at the bottom. So, yeah, we mentioned a few weeks back he's very much Mr. Positive, Nigel Adkins, and he's obviously instilled that in his team. And the rewards are there for all to see. It's his club. It's his town. He's a former player, a fan of the club, and maybe all of that's knitting together to propel them forward.
15th then, we find Tranmere. Salford City in 21st parted company with another coach. It almost feels, Stowley, like Salford City have been forgotten in this division as a big club with decent financial resources, because other clubs with decent financial resources have stepped to the fore. There's latest rumours of potentially Ryan Giggs stepping into the breach there. And obviously with the Class of 92 connection, that would make sense to a certain degree. I know it's a part of the world that you've covered extensively. Obviously, slightly bigger clubs on that particular part of Salford. But what do you make of where they are, what they are, and potentially the direction they're heading in?
Well, this is probably one of the surprising stories of the season for me, because you're right about the whole big club thing in League Two because of Stockport in the last few years, and obviously the Wrexham story with the documentary and all the rest of it. They have been forgotten about a little bit, Salford, but that's also partly because of what's happened on the pitch, isn't it? And, you know, to think they're only 5 points clear of the relegation zone is mad, really, when you think that they were trying to get up for so long and getting in the playoffs and not quite making it. Of course, last season they were in the playoff semi-finals, lost to Stockport. They've gone 10 games now without a win, which is the longest spell for them in the EFL without a win. And out of those 10, they've lost 7. They've taken 3 points from the last 30. So they're very much in this sort of mentality at the moment of you know, expecting, I suppose, to get nothing out of matches. Matt Smith, who, friend of the pod, of course, we spoke to him a few weeks back, has lovely not scored for 7 games. He was on a roll before that. So there's lots of contributing factors to this. But ultimately, yeah, they've only won 6 games all season out of 25. I mean, they shouldn't be doing that with the resources they've got, with the players that they've got. So yeah, next appointment is big. I don't see them going down.
No,
but they could, and that's why they've acted, isn't it? Because maybe they felt that the form wasn't going to pick up. And I praised Neil Wood when he got the job, and early on in the season here, because I do think he's a coach with a lot to give. Mm-hmm. I think he's learnt a lot from his time at Manchester United. I've worked with him. He's a good guy. He's got good relationships with players. But it just hasn't worked out, which is a real shame for him. And 19 months in charge and he's out the door and they're looking for another one.
19 months in charge. I mean, that feels like about 20 years in the sense of how long managers get. Current climate, doesn't it? 83 days or 19 months. I know which one I'd rather take. Stanley, thank you so much for joining us. The first pod of the new year. Give us a quick resolution from your point of view.
Pod more, if possible.
There is a t-shirt right there, Podmore.
And see you more in person, because
that would be lovely.
We've chatted like sick of this that. A lot, but
yeah, you'd be sick of that by the end of January if that was. Yeah,
I was going to say February will come along. I'll regret that one.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Keep yourself busy, my friend. See you soon.
And you too.
So that's the first part of 2024. Done. A huge thank you to Stephen Fletcher, David Stowell and Ebu Adams. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the follow button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton, and I'll see you next week on the official EFL podcast.